If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball Insiders. Happy Wednesday. I'm Adam Weiner, joined, as always, by fansided MLB insider Robert Murray. The wild card round is underway. Are any of these best two out of three is going to make it to three? We've got plenty to talk about that is not on-field action, though, because a lot of teams, under cover of postseason opening, have decided to dismiss their managers, have their GM step down, front office shakeups, Paul DeBoni announced in Washington, all sorts of off-field info, changes of roles, drama, and managers hitting the open market to talk about. And that is our bread and butter. The offseason has come early, and here to break down the new openings, recent hirings and firings, and a few extensions is Robert Murray. Robert, how you doing, dude?
I am doing great. Happy hump day. We got some news as far as managerial firings and stuff going on around the league in terms of front office stuff. And oh yeah, like this thing called the postseason is also happening as well. So we have plenty to talk about. My notebook has some good stuff in it. So I am excited to dive into it. I'm ready to dive into all these openings. Also provide some insight and some thoughts on some other organizations around the league. So we shall have a good time. Adam Weiner, how are we doing? I know you're very excited about your New York Giants. Not so excited about your New York Yankees right now. But no, how are we doing?
We're doing all right. Yeah, tonight's the night that their season could end, and we'll know pretty quickly, I think, whether that is going to happen. We'll break it down a little bit, I'm sure. It's going to be an extra long show today. I think I'll probably take 8 minutes to go on a personal screed about the decisions made last night. But we've got plenty of managerial shuffles to talk about, and I think the insight you're able to provide there is going to be really interesting before we get into some of our game preview stuff. If anybody has any questions about people we don't address, rumors, what have you, pop into the comments, let us know. You can also join us in the Discord. Robert Murray is going to be doing a private Q&A there tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern. And I'm sure there'll be more information and rumors that are swirling even by then that we can't touch on today because it's moving so fast, faster than I thought it would. But we thank everyone for joining us on the stream, on your audio feed, or in the Discord, or all three of the above. Hit that join button below the video to pop on in there. Subscribe to the Moonshot as well, our weekly email newsletter that goes out straight to your inbox, as well as the Fansided Baseball Insiders feed on fansided.com/baseball-insiders. That's where Robert Murray and the rest of the Fansided MLB team break down on the biggest stories in the big leagues with humor, insight, and behind-the-scenes info. So join us there. Welcome to October. October 1st. Goodbye to several MLB managers. Everyone apparently is getting asked to transition into a front office role too. That's what's going on. The elder statesmen of the game are leaving the dugout and their teams are putting out press releases saying we would welcome them as head chief officer of innovation. And then by and large, those people are saying, no, I don't want to do that. But today, a couple shuffles, things that have changed that we you know, when we mocked up this outline hadn't even happened yet. Brian Snitker is now official. He will not be the manager of the Atlanta Braves moving forward. They appear to be treating him kindly on the way out. They're inducting him into the Braves Hall of Fame. And he is going to just graduate into an advisory role, it seems. I doubt he's going to be pursuing any additional managerial opportunities. But thoughts on Snitker? Is this the right time for his tenure to end? And what direction do you anticipate the Braves going now?
Yeah, the Snitker news came as zero surprise here. This is something that I've been hearing for the last year plus, that he was probably going to end up being gone at the end of this season. And lo and behold, that was correct. And he's retiring. He's stepping down. He's moving into an advisory role with the front office there. And it was not necessarily a storybook ending for him in Atlanta, considering the last two seasons were just a real struggle overall. And the team just was not able to stay healthy at all. But he is as respected of a manager that Atlanta or just any organization has had in recent memory. Like, people in Atlanta love him. And the pairing between Anthopoulos and Snitker was a very good marriage. And we even saw Anthopoulos get emotional. We saw Snitker get emotional talking about it. Whoever replaces Snitker is going to end up having some pretty big shoes to fill. And who exactly Atlanta ends up targeting for this job is going to be interesting. Like the names that I think make sense there would be like a guy like Walt Weiss. I could see, I wonder if like a guy like Mark DeRosa, who has some ties to the organization, could make some sense there. One thing I do know as a fact, it is, it's going to be pretty secretive. I mean, that's just how the Atlanta Braves operate. And I would not be surprised if that job, or if that job is ended up announced over a press release on Twitter. That's just the way it goes, that organization. But that is an extremely attractive job. You have a team that invests in the roster. You have a really strong front office. You have a really talented roster overall with Ronald Acuna, Austin Riley. Pitching as well. I mean, overall, it's a very attractive job, and they should be better going forward. I feel like we've said that for at least like the last year plus. But there's every reason to believe that they're going to be in a good spot to compete, and they should be able to land a very attractive option there.
You would have to imagine, and again, like you said, no surprise, but good to get the confirmation. Snitker, a couple of times on the way out, said things that waffled a bit about the team's direction for the future, made you wonder, oh, does he actually have an intention of just one more year? But a Bobby Cox disciple, a longtime manager, and a World Series champion, like you said, doesn't go out in the strongest of lights, but I don't think anyone's going to judge him wholly by this past season. Another adjustment based on today's news, Bill Schmidt stepping down as the Rockies GM, and I'm sure a lot of people watching are like, you guys never talk Rockies. You're talking Rockies today. I want to bring your attention to a Jared Diamond tweet, too, that I did find very interesting here. Quote tweets the Rockies statement with, I need you all to understand how many very all caps smart people in baseball view running the Rockies as a dream job. It's the ultimate challenge, trying to figure out how to build a winner in that environment. Smart executives are tantalized by it. They want to prove they can do it. So I'll posit to you, do you see this vacancy being filled by a smart executive, a young go-getter who wants to do the impossible and win in Colorado? It's a great sports scene. Denver has the NBA and NHL champions. The Denver Broncos are a storied NFL franchise. It's a beautiful climate, passionate fans. Mm-hmm. Really high air and really hard to win baseball games there. So do you expect like a Peter Brand from Moneyball walking in there, or what does the line of succession look like in Colorado?
That is a hell of a question. And what Jared Diamond said is spot on. And that is a very attractive job. And I've had people around the game ask me for intel on that job. I had someone who I really respect say that he wants the job. I mean, that's there's people that are definitely looking here. And the names that I think would make a lot of sense here would be Scott Sharp of the Kansas City Royals, Thad Levine, who was previously with Minnesota. He's now doing stuff for MLB Network, I believe. Matt Klein with the Milwaukee Brewers would make a lot of sense. We've talked about him on the show before. I think he's very good. I've spent a good amount of time around him, and it's from my time covering the Brewers, and he is as sharp, as respected as any executive, I think, in ball at this point. It's only a matter of time before he's a GM. So those are the three names that I'm watching. I'm sure there's going to be others on that list there as well. But that job, for as bad as that team has been, is definitely viewed as attractive. And I think the only question that people can really have about it is how much Dick Mumford is going to end up spending. Or, I mean, I guess the other question is how much is he going to end up meddling? And I mean, we saw it with the Chris Bryant contract. We've seen it with other stuff as well. He can be involved, but if he hires the right people, then he doesn't have to. And I'm telling you, he will have no shortage of options looking for that job. That is a very good shot by Jared Diamond.
Yeah, if anyone wants to email Dick Monfort, you can get in on that. Get in on that action. Ask him yourself. I'm sure he'll let you know what he's thinking in a couple of words.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, Snicker, again, that's a graduation. That's, the Vitamin C song. You know, Sarah McLachlan, I Will Remember You. There are plenty more changes that border on dismissals, if not outright dismissals, that I think we can break down today. And I'm going to move the Angels to the top of the show just because it seems like the Sharks are circling there on a replacement a little more than maybe the other openings. We're going to go down the line, talk about the openings and a couple of extensions. And I do see Ethan Fisher's comment on the Pirates coaching shuffle and the White Sox coaching shuffle. There's just so many shuffles. We will absolutely get to them. But Ron Washington threw his hat in the ring to come back. Angel said no thank you. Ray Montgomery also gone in Anaheim, and a little uncertainty around Perry at this point as GM. It's unclear what direction they're going, and there hasn't been much communication. What we do know is that the reported frontrunner for the managerial job is none other than Albert Pujols, according to The Athletic's reporting, Katie Wu, Ken Rosenthal. So any insight there and maybe what we could even expect in terms of how quickly this process could be completed, if you're hearing the same thing about the direction the Angels are going, and what a weird blow that might be to St. Louis and Chaim Bloom, who are going to run it back with Ollie Marmol, but maybe we're hoping for a shot at Pujols in a year.
Yeah, this one has caught me off guard in a lot of different ways. I had someone who has ties to the team think that he said he believes that it's going to end up coming down to Pujols or Torii Hunter. Whether or not that is ultimately the case, I don't know. It comes down to Artie Moreno, but my guess is if Artie had it his way, it would be Albert Pujols. And yeah, I had a pretty good inclination yesterday that if Pujols was hired, it was going to be an Artie Moreno decision. I feel even stronger about that today. And even then, like, if he's hired, like, what does it mean for Perry? Because this part of the Athletic story really stood out to me, that the status of Perry remains unclear. While he has 1 year remaining on his contract, he is not expected to be the lead decision maker in the hiring of the next manager. If the general manager is not hiring the manager or not responsible for hiring the manager or having the final word, why have him? And that part to me is strange. It makes me kind of ask questions of what exactly his status is going to be. My feel has been that he was probably going to return, but this stuff kind of makes me question exactly what his future might be with the Angels. But overall, I mean, it is an attractive job. It's one of 30, but considering Artie Moreno's presence, considering they have talent on the roster, but they're not close to being a World Series contender by any means. I don't think that's going to be the most attractive job. So if they're able to get Pujols or if they're able to get Torii Hunter, I don't think that's necessarily like a bad thing, but it would suggest to me that Artie Moreno's meddling, and that's kind of a scary thing. But again, like, Pujols could be a great manager. He's done very good stuff as a coach before. I believe he did at the World Baseball Classic, if I remember correctly. And he showed some good things there, but yeah, it's a projection to say the least.
It's symbolically pretty funny too, that like, when we think of Albert Pujols, we think of him as a Cardinal, and you think of his Angels era as kind of being the downfall of Albert Pujols. And for his first managerial opportunity to be in the Angels dugout instead of the Cardinals dugout, I think you can't help but associate, you know, seeing him in that hat with the twilight years of his career. And then of course he was reborn in LA and going back to St. Louis for a little bit. But yeah, he might very well be a good manager. I totally agree with you, and I'm aligned with you that it does feel like meddling to advance his case so quickly, so soon. And Chaim Bloom, again, choosing to run it back with Ollie Marmol, you can't help but think about, okay, let's see what this 1 year is like. And then is Albert Pujols managing in LA while Yadier Molina is managing in St. Louis? Like, Can we just sim to that? I think I'm good on the last Ollie Marmol season, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's a lot of different questions about that one. And Ollie Marmol, like, he hasn't done a bad job. He's been dealt a really tough hand with St. Louis. And yeah, the fact that Chaim Bloom has wanted to keep him in place, especially considering, like, typically front office guys want to have their own people in place as the manager. So that would seem to suggest that they have a good relationship, that there's belief that Ollie Marmol can end up being the guy there. But if he struggles this year, then the Yadier Molina chants or the cries are going to be very, very, very loud. But again, the Angels job is totally fascinating to me. We'll see if it ultimately ends up coming down to Pujols or Torii Hunter. But we'll see. But a lot of people around the league are watching that one and what Artie Moreno ultimately decides, because As I've said many times, it's anyone's guess when it comes to Artie.
I'm glad it wasn't done by the time the show started. Of course, everybody check back, hang out in the Baseball Insiders Discord. I'm sure we'll be talking about that plenty as that gets closer to decision time. George Corey in the comments asking about realistic choices for the Giants job, and I'm glad he is because we are certainly going to go there now. There were some ominous comments from Bob Melvin that made his departure feel not only possible but probable. Lo and behold, they do make that decision. And Buster Posey comes out today and throws a little bit of water on the idea that, hey, Bruce Bochy is a ready-made replacement. Let's run it back. Let's head back to the early 2010s. He's saying not so much. So thoughts on Buster getting to choose his guy now and what direction he might go in for a San Francisco Giants team that I think everyone would agree, disappointing season, familiar season, and yet still alive in the wildcard race with under 2 weeks to go. And surging, briefly evening things up with the Mets before falling off and ceding that spot to the Reds.
Yeah, this job is going to be attractive. And I mean, they have a lot of talent on that team. Obviously, they still need to do more, add maybe another bat or two, and always reinforce the pitching. That's always a priority there with the Giants. But Buster Posey is viewed as a very good leader, someone that you want to work for. And to me, there should be no shortage of interest. And Bochy, as soon as he was let go by the Rangers, or they mutually agreed to part ways, or however they phrased it, my mind went to Bochy in San Francisco. But with Posey throwing cold water on that, we can safely rule that option out. The name that to me has stood out, and this is my own speculation, and just we'll see, is Nick Hundley. And he's got experience playing for the Giants. He's got familiarity with Buster Posey. No coaching experience. He's currently with the Rangers, his front office and everything. So like Pools, this would end up being kind of a projection as far as what he can be. But he's not that far removed from the game as a player. And former catchers and backup catchers are usually very good managers. We've seen that with Stephen Vogt. We've seen that a bunch of other places as well. So to me, his candidacy would be a really good thing. So we'll see. The other, like, this is not necessarily Giants connected, but the other option I think would be good for Giants or just any other team would be Ricky Weeks with the Brewers. He's their associate manager, I believe, and I'm not exactly sure what that title ultimately entails, or it's a new one, but he is probably going to be a manager before too long. And considering the Brewers' success, teams always want to try to replicate that. And we don't know if Posey is going to prioritize having a former player leading the ship in the clubhouse, but I think he'd be a pretty good name.
I have never felt older in my life than hearing that suggestion right now. The rookies I collected their first year autograph cards when I was like 13 are now officially major league managerial candidates and aren't terribly young to be doing that job either. So, yeah. Egg on my face, I guess Clint Everts and Dallas McPherson and Jeff Francis might be next in line. But for now, it's Ricky Weeks and the rest of those 2002 guys. We'll have to see. That's an interesting shout. I had not thought of Ricky Weeks yet. I already felt old enough when like Alex Cora and Boone were taken over, and now we're moving on to the next generation, it would seem. And that includes the likely heir apparent in Texas. Again, maybe I'm just taking a step too far and declaring this person to be the likely manager, but Bruce Bochy out from the dugout. I was conflicted. I thought this might be a Brian Snitker situation where Bochy would peacefully transition to a front office role and wouldn't be seeking to get back in the dugout. But then the Giants job opened up. I pivoted. I changed my take. And then Buster Posey changed my take back. Now I'm not sure if he ends up anywhere other than an elevated role in Texas, just sort of letting his Hall of Fame clock begin prior to his eventual inevitable election to the Hall. The manager in waiting there, he's been brought up in the comments here, has been Skip Schumacher for kind of a while, ever since he inexplicably was weaned out of his Marlins gig. I know Cardinals fans probably want to get a crack at him as well, but this does feel like a natural succession plan in Texas, unless you think they could throw a wrench in things.
Yeah, the Rangers, it felt like as soon as they ended up hiring Skip Schumacher to like a front office role, he was the manager in waiting in Texas. And that's going to end up being my belief. It seems like their list is pretty short there in Texas. And I'd imagine he's top of it. And the fact that he's gotten to see what it's like working in that organization and what Chris Young is like as a leader, to me would be a really good thing for him, and gives him that insight that he wouldn't have for other jobs. And Young is a really like smart executive. He's a good executive, and from all accounts, he's good to work with. So to me, the favorite there in Texas would be Skip Schumacher. I would imagine all these other teams that have openings are going to be calling about Skip. And like, yeah, I'd mention him with the Giants. I'd mention him with all these other teams. Like, he's the top candidate available, and he's going to get a lot of interest. So I think it would behoove the Rangers to go out and get this thing done quicker, or more quickly than the typical process. But I don't think they're going to rush it. I could see Nick Hundley being another option here. We'll see, but I think it's going to be Skip. I think it's going to be in Skip when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I can't get that out of my head. And again, yeah. Top candidate everywhere. You know, there's going to be competition undoubtedly, but the Rangers were, I believe, the first to make this move. The Giants might have beaten them to it with Bob Melvin, but I feel like the Rangers were quick to give Bochy his flowers and walking papers in one bundle so that they could get an early jump on making sure that Skip Schumacher's transition was as comfortable as possible. Not sure, but that's the vibe I got. I wasn't surprised by either of those or what happened around Washington, Ray Montgomery. I was genuinely surprised by Rocco Baldelli in Minnesota, even though they are in the worst shape of any of these teams. Had a monstrous midseason sell-off. Baldelli obviously did not have a good or fun year, but you know, he's a manager of the year finalist, although that seems to be a cursed role at this point in time. I never watched this team and thought, oh, they're not competing for Rocco, or, oh, he's getting outmatched, he's falling behind. And yet, I guess when you're cleaning house, you just take no prisoners, and everybody is an option to be jettisoned, including, you know, every player on the roster outside of apparently the very loyal Byron Buxton. What are your expectations for Minnesota's next manager? And what about the rest of their offseason, where it feels like Joe Ryan is probably in exile island at this point? Like, does anybody stay there?
This is the job that I have the least amount of insider thoughts on, because it's a tough job. They have a team that does not really invest much into the roster. They're coming off of an epic sell-off at the deadline. Like, they have a good front office to work with. Like, Derek Falvey is very good. He's very smart. And I think he did a tremendous job at the deadline, considering every circumstance there. But Baldelli was dealt a pretty tough hand. And I don't know how many people could really survive that job or maximize that job or even compete with that roster. So he will get interest. And the other point that I wanted to make with the Rangers job is, yes, like, it's a different front office, but Baldelli was an option there in Texas before they ended up going with Bochy. So, we'll see. Or maybe it wasn't Bochy. Maybe it was before Bochy. I can't remember the exact timeline, but I know he was at one point highly thought of there in Texas. So, so we'll see. But yeah, I don't have a good read on that job at all. It's that might be it's not going to be a tough job to fill, because as I said before, the Angels, it's one of 30. And like, people want that job, but it's if Skip had a choice between the Rangers and the Twins, my guess is if he would probably go to the Rangers. And I don't even think he'd have to think twice about it.
Yeah, and the Twins have done themselves no favors here entering the market, needing a manager who doesn't know who half of his roster will be when opening day arrives. Before we get to the run it backs, a couple of comments I want to get to as well. QRSTABV, I'm definitely not going to try to pronounce that, but I will read the letters, asked us about Tony Mancelino and the Orioles, as well as David Ross being a potential fit there. Mancelino closed strong. That was a good half year for him. A lot of similarities to what happened in Pittsburgh. But I guess non-committal, we're still waiting, and not a phenomenal job in the final two series against the Yankees, where the Orioles could have really sunk the Yankees' battleship and instead went 1-6 against them. So good steps forward. Kobe Mayo looked like the player he was thought to be in September. Samuel Bisaio had flashes. That series against the Dodgers was an all-timer. And they ultimately finished as a 500 club after starting well below that underwater. Do you think he gets a genuine crack at the job, at least an interview? And if not, what is Mike Elias looking for in Baltimore?
Yeah, my guess is he'll end up getting a chance to have that job full time. But considering the overall state of the Orioles, and like, yeah, they've been really disappointing the last couple of years, but the talent on that team is undeniable. And to me, there's going to be a lot of interest in that job. So it would be really smart for Elias to open it up and look externally. And we can mention all the names that we've talked about previously on the show as possible options there with Baltimore. And they also want to hire a GM there as well, but there's no real timetable for that as well. So this is a very important offseason for the Orioles. They have to get the GM hire right. They really have to get the managerial hire right. But they also got to bolster that pitching staff, because that was the real detriment of that team. And if they're able to accomplish all three in the same offseason, then we could be talking about the Orioles possibly getting to a spot where they can get back to the postseason, they can get back to competing. But there's no denying or doubting that this is a crucial offseason for them. And one other note that I have on Baltimore is, yeah, I've seen all the Adley Rutschman trade smoke. I don't think they're going to be in a position where they sell low. My guess is they hold on to him. They try to get him back to that spot where he once was. Yeah, I know they ended up extending Samuel Basayo before and gave him a long-term contract, but he's a more bat first option. He can DH, he can play maybe first base, like we'll see there. But Rutschman should be their long-term guy. At least that's what they hope for internally. And this next year is going to be crucial for them, and I don't see them selling well.
No, that makes all the sense. Rutschman barely played in the second half, so there was a regression there, but you have to ask yourself how much of that was injury related. And I think if you're being honest with yourself, your answer is a good deal of it. So you have to give him some time to reestablish his value. Remember how intrinsic he was to the Orioles' success when they brought him up, too. He changed that culture overnight. So I don't think he's the kind of player who you want to be, like you said, selling low on, get him out of here, when there are alternatives for Basayo as a DH, as a first baseman. Rutschman was the cog in 2022-23 and for most of 24. So,
and he was the number one overall pick. This isn't a Henry Davis situation. This is Adley Rutschman. He's showing it at the big league level. You don't give up on a guy like that. It's at least not yet. But if there is ever a team that could go out and try to entice the Orioles, I wonder if it's AJ Preller and the Padres, because boy, do they need a catcher. And they were exploring some different names at the deadline. And Rutschman would seem like a prime AJ Preller target. But again, I don't see that happening.
And we know they don't go small at any position unless they absolutely have to. So I would imagine the Padres would be in here, and they would be in on Stephen Kwan, pending the outcome of this Cleveland Guardians Detroit Tigers series and run. Shout out to some of the other names being mentioned in the comments. Andrew Bailey as a Yankees target. I like it. We'll talk about the Yankees in a little bit. If you're trying to get that rivalry ratcheted back up, maybe swipe someone internal in Boston, you know, try to get some guys switching sides in the other direction for once, instead of just handing them Garrett Whitlock and Aroldis Chapman and Richard Fitz and Greg Weissert and Rob Refsnyder and all those dudes who are doing pretty well over there. Caleb Cottom, also a good shout. And Jason Varitek, interesting, and an interesting note too from the Red Sox folks in the comments that he's been passed over by Boston a few times. So not sure what that means and if he wants to go into managing or if he's just comfortable being in his old dugout as they enter a new and pretty successful era. But I've got my eyes on that, and I'll definitely do Yankees thoughts when we talk about the postseason series. Want to get to a very early question, though, from Ethan Fisher, who wanted to ask about Oscar Marine and Brent Strom saying no go in Pittsburgh, because the Pittsburgh Pirates were in the news this week as well, firing their pitching coach. I think everyone who watched the Pirates this year knows that their pitching was a massive issue. So really good move there. No, that's all they have is good pitching. Then Don Kelly, who did a good representative job, and the Pirates were really good at home this year, an odd season for them by many measures, will be returning. Ben Cherington also coming back, and his contract reportedly runs through 2027. Can Don Kelly be success in Pittsburgh with Ben Cherington calling the shots? And also, what is going on with the pitching coach situation? Ethan Katz dismissed from Chicago, big time White Sox shakeup. Does he become a candidate immediately?
Yeah, Ethan, I'm really glad you asked this. And I've had thoughts on the Pirates here for quite a while. I'm going to start with Don Kelly. When Derek Shelton was there, it wasn't like a pretty product. But as soon as Don Kelly ended up changing, or he ended up becoming the guy there. People around the league noticed a difference in the team. They were more playing more fundamentally sound. They were playing better. They looked like a better coached team, and that earned him the job of full-time manager. And we even saw Bob Nutting say it when he became the interim guy during the season. Like, there's nobody that loves Pittsburgh or represents Pittsburgh baseball more than Don Kelly. So, it was not a surprise that he was named the guy there. As far as the pitching coach goes, I don't know. That one kind of caught me off guard. Maybe they have somebody else in mind. I'm not exactly sure, but that was not something that was necessarily on my radar. But maybe it was just a case of the new manager, Don Kelly, wanting his own people in place. So that's entirely possible, but I don't have a definitive answer there yet. As far as the Ben Cherington thing goes, I know I've been critical of him, and I'm not the only one there. But I think some of the stuff that I said after the trade deadline was probably – actually, not probably. It was way too strong that I said it was his last year in Pittsburgh, that it was the beginning of the end of his time with the Pirates. And that was inaccurate. And after further digging on their deadline, I realized that the market for Mitch Keller did not develop. The market for Andrew Heaney, for Tommy Pham, for other guys was just not there. And if they would have traded those guys, it would have been for pennies on the dollar. And that's not something that any team should do. And I give Ben Cherington credit for not doing so and still facing the public backlash that he got, especially from me. So is he a perfect general manager? Like, no. I don't think there's any GM who claims to be perfect, but I wanted to correct that about Ben Cherington and just publicly apologize for that, because my criticism was way too strong. He's a good executive, and he earned the right to be in Pittsburgh for another year. And again, like, it's a tough job, and Bob Nutting has not really given him much to work with. So I think if he had a different owner in place that spent more, things would look differently there. But he can only do he can only do his best with what he's got. And Bob Nutting has not really given him that much to work with. So yeah, that's been on my mind for a while. So Ben Cherington, if you're watching this, I apologize. But that is my actual honest take on the Pirates.
Yeah, and they are going to have a shot to prove that this regime can build what they've been looking to build. You look at the Cleveland Guardians lineup in a postseason game right now. The Pirates maybe are not as far away as some fans believe, but it is going to require a little bit of additional spending and some veteran bats who can supplement these kids who are coming up. And a miss like Henry Davis only looks worse, like you brought up, because of their unwillingness to spend. We're in a position where maybe they can translate their home success onto the road next year. Maybe a full year of Don Kelly does make a difference. It will be Ben Cherington controlling the reins from this point forward. Any additional, and before we have some playoff talk, thoughts on the White Sox coaching exodus and what they might be targeting? We had a question from Baseball Tossed as well.
Yeah, I've honestly got nothing on that. That's a good question, but I genuinely don't have a feel for what they're doing right now. I mean, we'll see. I'll send some texts, because I actually want to find that out, and we'll see what we ultimately get back.
Yeah, we thank you for your question, though, and happy to bring that up as well. Always keep bringing your questions. We are happy to touch on things that we miss on the show, because there's a lot of baseball going on. All right, let's get to the wild card series. The Tigers and Guardians still in progress, so can't make any declarative statements there. Surprise, surprise. It's been a tight game with very little offense today. Chase DeLauter making his major league debut, dropping the first fly ball that comes his way, and then drawing a crucial walk later and making a ridiculous throw to third to take a run off the board. Kind of a mixed bag. But Tarek Skubal is Tarek Skubal. Yesterday, he has shaken off those playoff ghosts, in case you thought he had them, in case you thought he was going to be defined by the weird backwards hike through his leg throw to first base. Does not seem that that is the case. He has given the Tigers an advantage. At the very least, you know, if they lose today, they've got a game three because of how dominant he was. The Cubs take game one from, I think we both picked the Padres. The Red Sox take game one from the Yankees. Not at all surprised. The Yankees did what they do when they play AL East rivals in big games and playoff games yesterday, and have another one tonight. And the Dodgers, they got to a weird portion of their bullpen yesterday, but by and large, they ran over the Cincinnati Reds. Skubal and whatever happened in the Yankees game feel like the main storylines to me. But who'd you come away most impressed with from that opening slate.
Yeah, I came away most impressed with the starting pitching. And it starts with Skubal, and then it really extended to that series with the Red Sox and the Yankees with Max Fried and Garrett Crochet. Aces in the postseason are supreme. They are exactly what teams need. I mean, obviously you need a lot of different things, but having an ace gives you just such a huge advantage. And just the ability that these guys performed at. And Skubal, he shut down the Guardians, and he had a great play where it was a chopper over his head with runners, I believe, on first and second. And it was a funny play. He fielded it and turned around and threw a guy out at home. And I mean, it saved the Tigers. It got them with a 1-0 lead here going to game two for the against the Guardians. And if they can end up beating the Guardians in this series and advancing, then it's going to quiet all those concerns about their drastic fall that they had throughout the second half of the season. The other one, and I give Mark Powell credit for this one, our editor at The Athletic, or and not at The Athletic, but at FanSided. I was looking at The Athletic before, and I was in my head. But our editor here at FanSided, he mentioned yesterday how Crochet stayed in the game while the Yankees pulled Max Fried with a similar pitch count. It ultimately ended up working out for Boston, and Crochet ended up pitching pretty deep into the game. I think he had, 117 pitches?
117, and the last one was like 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, he was throwing absolute gas, and that was a big deciding factor in the game. And I had a very bad feeling it was going to get worse when Devin Williams went into the game, especially when he issued a 4-pitch walk to start. I believe it was the 8th inning. Got through it, but still – yeah, that was a pretty interesting moment there. But the starting pitching really stood out to me. I'll ask you, Adam, what stood out to you yesterday, specifically with your Yankees?
Yeah, so I'm not happy, but I think I'm going to counteract some of these takes and maybe surprise some people with where I land. I think Aaron Boone made a lot of mistakes last night. I think not going batter to batter with Max Fried was a mistake in the 7th inning, but I do think that people who are just unilaterally acting like, oh my God, you can't pull him there, that's ridiculous, I don't think that's the take either. Like, Max Fried was losing steam. Max Fried and Aaron Boone had a conversation in the dugout saying, we're going to give you this, but we want you to get Jarren Duran, right? And then we're going to entertain taking you out. He enters the inning at 99 pitches, gets Duran on 3, but they're all breaking balls. So he's very clearly a little bit, I mean, I don't think it's fair to compare Max Fried and Garrett Crochet, two aces, but two different species of people. I mean, Garrett Crochet was pumping 100 on the 117th pitch of his outing, and he was a little bit skittish at the end. He lost the plate a little bit to Austin Wells before finding it and refocusing, but Garrett Crochet is a horse. Max Fried is a finesse artist who finds the corners and was dominant last night and did his job, but with Duran as his final batter, comes in and throws him breaking ball, breaking ball, breaking ball. It might have been a cutter, but either way, change of pace. He's not going with the 96, 97 mile an hour heater. And the reason is he had lost that velocity at that point in time. So I don't think it's fair to say Garrett Crochet, an all-time big-bodied freak of a human, and Max Fried should be treated under the same circumstances. That said, the Yankees bullpen is a disaster, has been a disaster all year. Not yep. surprising it was their undoing last night. And if it's their ultimate undoing, you know, look, here's my shocked face. Not shocked at all. I would have let Fried face Adon Rafaela. If he gives up a game-tying home run, then so be it. Obviously, what happened after that was worse than a game-tying home run. So I don't think Aaron Boone's getting criticized if he leaves Fried in one batter too long and the home run is surrendered, given what is in this bullpen. But I don't think it was a total disaster to pull him fading at 102. I think Luke Weaver's performance was much worse. You're asking him to get the bottom of the lineup, 0-2 to Rafaela, and somehow that at-bat goes 11 pitches. A guy who never walks against you because the balls were non-competitive. Nick Sogard hits 197 against righties and a pretty big hit there, right? So I'm going to pin that on the bullpen more than I'm going to pin it on not going batter to batter with Fried. I would have tried Fried until he put somebody on base, but I don't think that's the most ridiculous decision ever made. Here's where I stand with Aaron Boone in terms of handling things wrong. Jazz Chisholm and Ben Rice sit. OBP of 193 for lefties against Crochet. So if you want to sit Ben Rice, who does not hit lefties well and certainly does not hit Garrett Crochet well because Garrett Crochet is a freak. I can get down with that. It doesn't feel good, but I get it. If Jazz Chisholm is healthy, he was hit on the forearm by a pitch on Saturday. But if he's healthy enough to play, he has to start. That's a human decision. You're not taking into account Jazz Chisholm's mood, right? If you're just unilaterally taking your lefties out, and one of them is a 30-30 guy in Jazz Chisholm who wants to win above all else, extremely competitive, but is one of your clear assets in this game. I think if you want to go with Ahmed Rosario for the platoon, you can play Rosario at third, play Jazz at second. You not need to start both Jose Caballero and Ahmed Rosario. And then even sillier than texting Jazz he wasn't starting, and even sillier than benching him in this game, was bringing him in as a defensive replacement in the eighth inning, all but ensuring it was the Rosario was the last out of the seventh. Then they put Jazz in. So you're pretty much guaranteeing Jazz doesn't come up in the eighth, which might be Garrett Whitlock. You're all but guaranteeing he faces Aroldis Chapman. Ahmed Rosario is 3-for-7 with 2 home runs against Aroldis Chapman. If you wanted to protect Jazz from Crochet, you should want to protect him from Chapman as well. And Aaron Boone was asked today about that decision by the Yankee beat, by Max Goodman, I believe, asked specifically about that move. Aaron Boone said, quote, "It was a very fair question to ask why that happened." And Boone said it's the one decision that he regrets. I would say it's the silliest decision he made. It's not the reason they lost. Weaver's performances and Giancarlo Stanton in big spots, although I can't really flame Giancarlo Stanton, did come up small in two big spots. I'm going to put some onus on Aaron Boone's shoulders, of course. You know, he got outmanaged by Alex Cora in a big game, but I don't think pulling Max Fried was nearly as egregious as what he pulled with Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah, you got to live and die by your stars in the postseason. Like, there's no other way of operating here. And, like, you have to start Jazz Chisholm, and he's going to be in the lineup for game two. So they're writing that wrong. But for the Yankees' sake, I hope it's not too late for them, because that, it didn't cost them, but it hurt. But also, what hurt them was having bases loaded, no outs in the ninth inning, and you have 3 base hits in the first 5 pitches. And then Giancarlo Stanton strikes out, and, like, to be fair, like, the splitter that Aroldis Chapman threw him was dirty. Yep. But after that, you couldn't. Well, the second batter, was a fly ball to right, and I'm actually curious what you think about this one too, Adam, because they had Paul Goldschmidt at third base in that scenario, right? Did the thought of pinch running ever occur? Like, cross your mind, or what do you think?
Yeah, that was, I think the booth let him get away with that one too. I would have pinch hit. I wouldn't have pinch run for Goldschmidt on second, but as soon as he's on third with nobody out and a sack flag and bring him in, I would have brought Jason Dominguez in there. They left Jason Dominguez and Ryan McMahon on the bench in this game. Pretty curious. If you don't start Jose Caballero, you can also bring Jose Caballero in there to be a threat. And I think a lot of times people get too obsessed with saying, well, you know, it wasn't the run that really mattered, right? It wasn't the tying run, so who cares? Hey, that run scores on the Jazz fly ball. The pressure is on with two outs. Maybe, I guess if you pinch run early, he could have even scored on the single in the gap. But I do think that was too close to being a fly out. I think you got to stick by second. I understand going station to station. That second run, just because it's not the tying run, it is important. And I think it's pretty silly they didn't play for it. So, you got to count on your stars to be stars. Giancarlo Stanton can't whiff there, but credit to Aroldis Chapman. He's throwing 95, 96, and he's getting tattooed. And then all of a sudden, with the bases loaded and nobody out, 100-101, disgusting splitter right on the corner.
Yeah, no, that's why they gave him the extension during the season. He's been phenomenal, and he gave up more hits yesterday in the ninth inning than he did in the entire month of August. So, I mean, that was an impressive performance by the Yankees doing that, but not so impressive with how they finished the game. But I'm curious to see exactly how it plays out here for game two. The rest of baseball is, we're going to be in for a very fun month of ball. And I actually fly out to Milwaukee on Friday, so stay tuned for coverage there. Shall be a very good time, and hopefully we can break some news while I'm there. And also stay tuned for me being on TikTok as well. That is going to become a thing. So follow me on TikTok at by Robert Murray, and you will see maybe some exclusive stuff there. Adam, I'm tossing it over to you.
Highly recommend that follow, and we're going to have as much content as possible throughout the postseason. So follow the both of us, follow the Baseball Insiders, come and subscribe here or sign up, you know, follow it on your favorite podcast platforms too. We're going to be doing some additional shows as we get into the off season for October. We're sticking it out Wednesday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern. Hopefully some very fun action this week and some updates from the ground in Milwaukee. For Robert Murray, I'm Adam Weinreben. We will see you next week.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.